You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
Hey, welcome back. We are here for the final hour. We have just spent the last hour talking to Lane Kiffin and Coach Drink from Missouri. Now we're talking to somebody that knows a little bit about football, Jordan Rodgers. Great to have you back on the show, Jordan. The cliche about what we are doing right now is interesting, but we are setting the table. And as somebody that studies film, and I've seen you do it countless hours, what? In terms of the conversations we've heard today, what have you paid attention to, and how do you try to separate the hype from what you see on the screen?
I really try to read through the lines with some of the coaches, I think, because they've rehearsed what they're going to say. There's talking points. I think if you listen closely, you can read between the lines. I was really interested to see what Brian Kelly had to say, right, in his opening remarks, how much we could glean from how he talked about his quarterbacks, what he needed to do to get that program that has the talent back to where LSU fans expected on a week in, a week out. He did mention one player directly in his opening comments. We followed up on it, Miles Brennan and his leadership, right? I mean, kind of the forgotten guy. Miles Brennan was competing for the starting quarterback job before Joe Burrow was ever at LSU. Right. Joe Burrow was in the Super Bowl last year. He was competing with a guy named Danny Etling, who already tried to be a receiver in the NFL and is no longer. That shows you how long he's been there. So, but the leadership aspect of this transition to who LSU is now, to who Brian Kelly wants them to be, whether that is with Jaden Daniels down the road, week one, whatever that is, Miles Brennan's playing a really crucial role right now in getting this team from a leadership standpoint where Brian Kelly wants it to be. I thought that was most interesting. I wanted to hear who he talked about and how he talked about his team.
And in terms of Miles Brennan, I mean, it seems like every time he is on the roll, he gets hurt.
Yeah.
And if you take, you can't take away injuries, but if you could, where do you think he would be based on what you've seen of him?
Well, last we saw him, early 2020, they lost to Mississippi State in a barn-burning shootout to start the week or start the year. They lost week three to Missouri in another barn burner. Miles Brennan was really good. That defense was so bad early that year, they couldn't stop a nosebleed. Miles Brennan threw for like 1,200 yards, 11 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He was sharp. The strength of this team right now, if you're LSU, is the receivers. So who can make the least amount of turnovers and distribute the ball most effectively? The big question mark, though, when you look at LSU, and this is getting a little bit into the weeds. We'll get there. We'll have more answers. But how's their offensive line? And how's their run game? John Emery will be back from not being part of the program all of last year. Noah Cain, transfer from Penn State. If they can find balance, they can win with Miles Brennan. If they can't run the football, they're going to need Jaden Daniels because he can run the football. He can be athletic. He can make some dynamic plays. So it'll sort out. We don't know what's going to happen. I don't think Brian Kelly knows what's going to happen sitting here right now.
As you think about some of the other quarterback situations, you had Kiffin here today.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got one of the tougher jobs in the league. He can do it, but how do you assess their quarterback situation?
Interesting. Luke Altmaier was thrown in a bad situation in the bowl game, right? It's a tough spot to fill in. When you watch him, and I got to watch him a lot in practice, in warm-ups and games, obviously didn't get a lot of playing time, he's got a really strong arm. Now, the biggest question that I think Ole Miss needs to answer is, what's their running game going to look like? They lost their top four rushers. Snoop Connor, Jerrion Ealy, Henry Parrish, and Matt Corral. All guys that could run the football. As much as you think of Corral and Kiffin throwing bombs, this was a team that ran the football. Jackson Dart has a little mobility to him, but he's not a Matt Corral. They did bring in two running backs in the portal that'll help out a lot. So he can get it done, but you lose that amount of talent. You lose your offensive coordinator, which I think it's easy not to talk about because Matt Corral gets a lot of the attention and all these transfers. But Jeff Lebby, I thought was the best play caller in the country. You lose him to Oklahoma. Charlie Weiss Jr., I mean, He's familiar with it, familiar with Kiffin. He's going to be fine. But that's a lot of pieces to just say, we're going to plug all these guys in, and it's going to be fine. It's going to be as good as it was last year in the toughest conference in college football. So there'll be some learning bumps and bruises early on.
I realize you studied the film. I talked to the people that cover, and I was talking to somebody earlier. He said, well, I think they can, you know, be tough, and I think they could get to 10. I'm like going, but that's every writer who covers a team these days, because all they hear is the height. But I mean, I bet by the end of Thursday, we'll have heard 10, 11, 12 teams that could all win 10 games. I don't know how.
But the interesting part about the SEC right now is after Alabama and Georgia, who's three?
Yeah.
I mean, you could sit here and you could say Kentucky. You could say Tennessee. You could say LSU. You could say Arkansas. You could say Mississippi. You could say probably seven different teams, and I'd be like, you have a valid point, and I can't say you're wrong. So there's a lot of movement that's going to happen. But Ole Miss tied a school record or broke a school record for wins last year. That's not going to happen again. Like, it can't with how good that everybody in that conference is getting better. Everybody in the West is getting better. Mississippi State lost three games last year by three or less. They're going to be better this year. LSU is going to be better. Arkansas is going to be better.
Since I'm sure you spent the summer thinking about it, who is number three?
Honestly, as I sit right now, I would say Arkansas. I feel more confident in them than Kentucky is a popular hot topic.
Sure.
I just don't feel good about them losing their best player and also probably one of the best play callers in the entire country, and Liam Cohen, who's now with the Rams. They lose Wandale Robinson. I think Will Levis, there's a ton of hype around him. He's only going to be as good as some of the pieces they have around him. And Wandell wasn't enough last year. They needed another guy. So that's going to be tough. Arkansas and KJ Jefferson, what they're able to do, lose their best receiver, best player, but he was their leading rusher. They got two running backs that are really good coming back. They got an offensive line that's good. Lost a couple pieces on defense, but I still think they're going to be solid. Right now, I have the least amount of question marks in the West about Arkansas. So I'm going to say three, Arkansas, but I don't know. They could be seven.
Here's what's interesting, because at some point, somebody's losing.
Yeah.
So if Arkansas is three, I don't know why. I just thought of Texas A&M could have some issues, because everybody wants to hype October 8th, but Arkansas is before that.
Yeah. Here's Texas A&M, ton of talent. Their biggest question mark for the last, since Christian Kirk, they have not had a bona fide number one receiver on the outside. And I think that has hurt them immensely, more than it shows. Anaya Smith, one of the best talents in the conference. But you need a guy in this conference that can line up on the outside and always be a mismatch.
Right.
You can move Anaya around a lot. And A-Chain, heck of a player. Two of the most dynamic players in the conference. But at some point, they need a guy on the outside that can just flat out win on anybody, and they haven't had that in a long, long time. They've had last 4 or 5 years, I think one time, Jamon Osman, have they had a receiver that led them in receptions and yards. So there's a lot of promise at Texas A&M. I still don't think, a lot of people are just kind of Max Johnson's the guy. I don't know if that's the case. I still think Haynes King is in this fight. I think there's a lot that can be used with his athleticism. And at times when you watch Max Johnson
I remember talking to you last year, and you were all over him.
Yeah.
And
I really liked him.
He gets hurt. And
totally. And Max Johnson, look, Max Johnson is a good quarterback.
Yeah.
But at times, and it could be a product of the system and at LSU and the question marks that were around that program and what they were going through. But at times, he didn't get the ball out of his hand.
Right.
So he's got to do that. They got to put an offense around him that can do that. And they got to have a dude on the outside emerge, because Isaiah Spiller is a big loss. And not having a bona fide number one guy on the outside is going to hurt too. They have a ton of talent. Ton of talent. That they can find ways to get the ball to Anais and A-Chain, but I still have questions. So I have more question marks about A&M to wrap this up than I do Arkansas right now.
That's really interesting, because, you can't help with the offseason we just had not to be digging deep on A&M and trying to figure them
totally
out.
Totally. But they lose a ton up front as well on defense. So, again, I like to say I know what I'm talking about right now. I got no clue. But I'm telling you, just watching it, what I watched last year, what I knew they were good at.
What I like about you among other things.
Thank you.
Tell me more. You're not going to the grocery store picking up a magazine.
Right.
And I think most of us here who don't understand the film like you would, because how could we, that's what you're basing it on.
So when you really dive into A&M last year, Zach Calzada had a one-of-a-kind game against Alabama, no doubt. His issue was accuracy. Now, Haynes King, still kind of an unknown about how accurate and how good of a just pure passer he can be. Max Johnson's an accurate quarterback. So immediately, I think you are better in that area. But are you better as a whole with the weapons around your quarterback? No, not right now. Without Isaiah Spiller? I don't think so. So that's where it's just, who's going to emerge? I don't know, but Arkansas has KJ Jefferson back. They have their best running backs back. They have transferred in some talent at receiver to help them out. It's close. I'd put them right there. I'm going to put Arkansas just ahead of them right now.
Before you go, in terms of I want to ask you about Tennessee.
Because, yeah.
Because that's a program that you can't help but
it's a little hype around the program now, huh?
But it's I mean, there's no in between though for them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're already and they
it's
have
10 or 11 games are bust right now.
Yeah,
right.
And that is patently absurd.
Yes, look, I think we had their Thursday night game last year, mm-hmm. and I remember preseason, so we hadn't seen a game yet. Going to practice and watching Joe Milton and Hendon Hooker, and I was like, man, just Hendon's just he's doesn't wow you with anything he does. Until we saw him, and he wowed us, pushing the ball downfield, 31 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, the way he ran the football as well. My biggest concern is how have they improved on defense?
Right.
They were 100-plus stopping the pass. So, yeah, you can put up some points. I think they're going to. Bayless Jones is going to be a guy that they really need to replace. Jalen Hyatt has to step up this year. He's got the skill set, the speed to be a guy like Bayless was last year. He's got to step up to complement Cedric Tillman. The offense is going to be fine. They're going to be great. The defense, did they get markedly better? Did they do anything to say, yeah, they're going to be better stopping the pass? I don't know. I don't think so. So 10 games, crazy, right? Could they win 8-9?
Well,
I think depending on how that side of the ball comes along, yes. But also the East, I think South Carolina's better. Right? South Carolina is going to be better this year. That's a big question mark.
We don't have time to psychoanalyze Florida because I think we could get everything.
I'm honestly not ready for that.
Yeah.
Florida, the most question marks I have about anybody right now, good and bad. I mean, the ceiling's super high. The floor, who knows for Florida right now. That one's wild to me. Yeah, I don't know enough about them
yet. You talk about a fan base that forget getting to a bowl game again. They are 15. They're back.
Yes, which is – again, they have some talent that you can back that up, but man, I don't know. With what they lost in the secondary, we'll see. But Anthony showed flashes. He's going to have to be – I think what's interesting about Florida, just real quick, it's going to hinge on how Napier develops that position. I know that sounds cliche, but Dan Mullen made his money and his legacy developing quarterbacks. That's also the reason that he's out the door now, because he wasn't able to develop Emery or Anthony to be what they needed him to be this last year.
Right.
So can Napier get that out of him when that was Dan Mullen? That's been Dan Mullen's shtick his entire career. So are we just saying, like, are we thinking, oh yeah, AR has it in him? He has a ton of talent, but if Dan couldn't get it out of him, there's going to be a lot more that needs to get better around him for that team to be competing in the East.
I think people at home are going, let's get this thing going. But you've laid it out quite interesting. Thank you, Jordan. We'll see
you later
in the week. We always appreciate your time. We're heading to a break. We don't have a long way to go, but we still have 45 minutes. We'll get your phone calls later in the show. A few more guests will drop by here as the media has absolutely gone and hit happy hour.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy.
It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back to SEC Media Days, brought to you by Regions, and we are here at the College Football Hall of Fame for the final 45 minutes of the show. We've been here all day, and we'll start again early tomorrow. Nick Saban will be here tomorrow, and we'll have a live coverage of that beginning at about 9 a.m. Eastern time. That's 8 o'clock in the land of Saban. Kimberly Bowden joins us, as CEO of this. We talked to you, I think we were here.
Kickoff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're here a lot.
Yeah. We like having you here.
But it's great to see you, and I'm afraid to ask what this is. I think I do recognize it.
You do?
I do.
Well, after last time, I wanted to bring something on, a little nice. And we have a brand new exhibit upstairs for folks to visit. It's called The Evolution of the SEC. So I grabbed a few things out of the Tennessee display case to bring down for you. So we've got the Tennessee helmet, we've got a Chip Kell jersey, and then we have the program from the 1998 National Championship as well.
Wow, that... are you going to put a marker on it? Because I'll probably put it on eBay tonight and see what I can get.
Yeah, no, we'll go ahead and put that back in the vault.
Okay. It's great to have you here. I just asked you a question that I was curious about because I have a lot of friends who Alabama's not far away.
No, it's a quick drive.
It's just right across the border. It is on the border. So Alabama fans watching right now, and mm-hmm. if they want to come over here tomorrow and see their coach, what's the procedure?
Absolutely. We will have what we call our quad, the area right outside where the helmet wall is, available to the public, first come, first serve, and they'll be able to see the coaches and players as they kind of walk through the quad. We had a blue carpet in 2018, so yeah, but they'll walk through the quad and then come into the main stage area.
And I would think Wednesday could have a big crowd as well.
Yeah, we've got Georgia, so it should be fun.
We were over there earlier, and mm-hmm. We've done the thing from Hoover for so long, but
right.
It's really awkward. If I could be descriptive here, I will. The media is almost cordoned off at the hotel in Hoover like they're in a zoo. They can't go anywhere. Here, they can walk around and do whatever they want.
They can roam. They have freedom. And one of the things we did differently from 2018 as well is we brought Radio Row into the building. So Radio Row is up on the second floor.
Is that what I'm seeing?
That's
right
what
there?
You're seeing up there, okay. Yeah. So that makes it a lot easier for the coaches and players to move back and forth. We've got quite a few media that do both, radio and print. And so it's...
Thought of that.
Yeah.
Just in terms of the Hall of Fame, let's talk about everything's evolving,
yes.
And you just can't stand still. So what are you doing? What do you try to do every year to make it more dynamic?
Absolutely. Well, we always have our rotating exhibit to constantly bring in fresh content. And, one of the things that we've done over the last couple of years, I think the one we're probably the most proud of is our HBCU exhibit. We pretty much quadrupled the footprint of our HBCU exhibit and opened that in June of 21.
Sure.
It has been really well received. So we've accomplished that. We built a ESPN 150. So we took all of that amazing content that ESPN curated, both SEC Network and ESPN. And so fans can kind of search that and kind of look back. Which has been really great. And then we're just constantly looking for the next technology. We just updated the game day desk with a lot of AR.
So. That is cool. Yeah, the game day desk, if you have not been here, is really a treat.
It's definitely, it's evolved and got a lot of AR elements that come in based on the team you choose.
And I want you to describe, because the first time I came over here, we were given a tour, and I ran into Tennessee stuff all over the place. So how does it work? You walk in, you register, you do whatever.
That's correct.
And you identify your school.
Yes. So the entire building is RFID enabled. So when you come in, you register first name, last name, and then you get to choose your school. We have 775 schools on our helmet wall. So the first thing that happens is your helmet lights up and people love that. You know, and then for the rest of the experience, any of the RFID exhibits will recognize you and offer, and you know, in the case of you, Tennessee content first. You can go beyond that. You're not limited to the Tennessee content, but the building will welcome you and serve up that personalized content.
It is truly remarkable, and you know, I've been to a lot of museums. They're impossible to get in. I was in the nation's capital the other day, and it's tough. It's expensive. Is it? What's the procedure here?
No, it's we're pretty wide open. You know, we do obviously have security, but our admission has remained pretty steady. We're at $24.99, so you know, I think we're very affordable for a family to come down and experience, you know, all the excitement of college football.
Well, Kimberly, I'm sure we'll be back. There's a lot happening in Atlanta, and you guys are always...
Well, I had a trivia question for you.
Oh, okay.
All right. Now, can you tell me the four men who have been inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame as both a player and a coach?
A player?
Mm-hmm. And a coach.
And a coach. I would think Johnny Majors.
Two of them have Tennessee ties. Okay. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, he got it as a player, yeah. Not yeah. As a coach. Should have been as a coach, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah. It's a tough one. Three of them are older.
Well, let's save the audience time and go ahead and reveal it.
Okay. Spurrier.
Okay.
Bobby Dodd.
Bobby Dodd.
Played
absolutely.
At Tennessee.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Georgia Tech.
Bowden Wyatt.
Great Tennessee. Bowden Wyatt followed General Nealon, I believe.
Yep. He played and coached at Tennessee, and then Amos Alonzo Stagg.
Amos. I would have never gotten Amos Alonzo
yeah.
Stagg.
But I pulled that out because they had Tennessee connections, too.
As you can tell, Kimberly, I was not a good student, so that has carried over to my career here. I thank you so much. We'll see you in a couple of months, I'm sure.
And, absolutely.
Always appreciate your hospitality.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to start studying tonight for the next quiz.
For my next quiz?
We'll be right back.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Final 30 minutes. We'll get to your phone calls in the final segment. Brody Miller joining us from The Athletic. Talked to Brody countless times over the years. Covers LSU for The Athletic. Wrote the now famous piece on Ed Orgeron, which I, you know, being the cynical, demented former newspaper guy, loved every word of it. Yeah. Have you moved on from that, or is that people still bringing that up like me?
People ask about certain parts of it every now and then, yeah.
That's not why we're here, though. I don't think anyone really cares about Ed Orgeron anymore other than Ed Orgeron. But let's talk about Brian Kelly, who, by all accounts, had a pretty good day here.
Yeah, I think my theme from the day with him was he let himself be in on the joke, right? I think a lot of the SEC still wants to make fun of him for the dancing or the accent, all that stuff, right? And I get it. But I think today, you know, he joked about his accent. He joked that he had a Boston, Midwestern, Louisiana accent. The family is not going to be the end of it. He laughed about the dancing, all that stuff. So I think today it was kind of a lot of showing people he's not what everyone thinks he is. I think there is a mentality out there that he's this angry drill sergeant type, and I don't think there's zero truth to that, but he's also a pretty personable guy who's really good in these settings, and I think that was kind of the theme today, is being like, hey, I can make fun of myself.
I thought it wasn't so much revealing because it's obvious, but you know, I think the truth is his best weapon. When he recounted his career, you just have to stop and go, yeah, this guy's pretty good.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I don't think there's really, I mean, Urban's a good precedent. There's not many people who have that many things of that many stops,
right,
and each one going well and being able to stick to a system and all these things. And I think that's what LSU's hiring him for, right? LSU's won a title with three consecutive coaches, but there's also been a lot of hills and valleys in that time. You know, you have 5-5 seasons, you have your 8-4s and all that. And I think so much of this hire is getting a guy who can, I don't want to make this sound, but raise the floor, you know, make it so you are consistently hanging around the top 10 and hopefully get to playoffs and things like that. Because he's a guy who has proven he knows how to build a system. He knows his process, things like that. And that's what Nick Saban's the best at, is process stuff, the boring stuff. And I think that's the key.
I had somebody say something to me today, and I would have pulled my hair out if I had any, but the guy said, yeah, I'm still not sure about the fit. And I'm like going, Bill Arnsberger 35 years ago, yep. Nick Saban, Les Miles. Yep. Les Miles not a fit for anything.
No, the fit stuff, Nick Saban was not a fit, and yet his culture is the culture they've been trying to replicate right. for 20 years, right? The fit stuff is more for the first 8 months before they play a game, right? And the second they play a game, and if he's winning, that will all be forgiven. And also fit, it's just, it's, the fit is what they're, not the, they're literally trying to get away from a Louisiana guy, but Ed Orgeron was the biggest fit you could literally build in a lab for LSU, yeah. and it didn't work out. Well, I guess you want a title, but still, this hire is so much about a reverting from what they just did, so I don't think the fit stuff matters.
And I mean, I don't know how history is going to, you know, record that title. Seems like it probably won't be great for Ed Orgeron.
I think it's so weird, though. It is bizarre, because I think there's a lot of people that are going to make the Gene Chizik comps, and you know, which I don't think is entirely fair, because he, you know, Orgeron did have a Fiesta Bowl the year before, stuff like that. What makes the Orgeron tenure so fascinating is, I think he deserves credit for the rise in a lot of ways. He did a lot of that stuff. He fixed a lot of things. And he also deserves the blame for what happened after. That's what makes it so weird. It's he did things right, and then he didn't.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to turn O into a cartoon character. Yeah. And quite frankly, why not? But, yeah, I mean, he was a coach for Tommy Tuberville 30 years ago. He coached Lane Kiffin said he was indispensable. Yep. You know, Pete Carroll. I mean, he had a pretty amazing pedigree as a recruiter and a coach.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Jack Marucci, the legendary trainer at LSU, said he is the most innovative coach he had worked with at LSU. You know, he's somebody who, people make him into a cartoon character. People think of him as just the way he talks. I don't think that's fair. I don't think it is. I think there are things he's very good at. He's a good defensive line coach, a great recruiter, and he did a lot of things well as a head coach. I mean, the USC interim run isn't worth scoffing at. But, yeah, just sometimes, you know, I think sometimes we view everyone as either you are the best or you are not good, when it's like not everyone can be Nick Saban or an Urban Meyer. A lot of guys are somewhere in the middle, where you're a pretty good coach, but maybe not a long-term fit at LSU.
Now that it's over, and obviously we all build Scott Woodward as the big game hunter, and he came in with a big one. But I ran into some A&M people the other night somewhere, and you know, they were still saying to the end, Scott Woodward was trying to get Jimbo Fisher. You reported the story. Is that accurate?
I believe that is accurate. I think Jimbo Fisher was target number one, and that target didn't go away. I don't know if he was still, you know, banging down doors. I won't pretend to know that. But absolutely, that was the target. That's his guy. I mean, there's a reason he brought him from A&M. And Jimbo has a lot of love for LSU. I don't think he's been very well outspoken about how much he loved his time there. Family was born there, all these things. He loves it. So I don't think he was going to give up on it till the end. But he had a list of guys that were pretty good options.
So when you think about what's happening at A&M and everywhere else, how is LSU, a state that you always hear about the fiscal aspect of it, the state underwater, literally, from a financial standpoint, how is LSU coping with the modern world of NIL and everything else?
I think
playing catch up might be unfair, but I think, you know, their state law limited them those first few months. Plus, you also have to factor in they just had to pay a buyout to a massive and they had to give Brian Kelly a $100 million contract, had to hire Kim Mulkey from, you know, the big boosters have been spending a lot of money. So I think there was this, you know, little tug of war, for lack of a better word. But no, LSU's in good shape. I don't know if they're in A&M shape or some of these other schools, but they are in good position. They have collectives now. I think their thing is, and Brian Kelly spoke about this today, he said, even if we had $50 million, they're not going to get into these massive bidding wars. I don't think the term I've heard often is they don't think that's sustainable. They don't think these $8 million deals are going to work long term. And I think they're trying to find a middle ground of kind of, you know what you're getting. None of these are fake deals. And also taking care of your current players that are proven. I think that's a big part of it, too.
Yeah, and listen, I don't think anybody believes Notre Dame is as pristine as they try to act like they are when it comes to recruiting. But they have more hurdles than others. How has he adjusted to the absolute street wars of the SEC recruiting?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think he's hired a pretty good recruiting staff. You know, Frank Wilson being the most famous, one of the biggest recruiters of all, you know, recent college football. I think he's done a good job of building that kind of staff. And I also think he's done a good job of, they are still playing catch up in Louisiana with some of these kids. I mean, they might only land 5 of the top 10 Louisiana kids this year. They are still playing, but they also are leaning on their national reach from his Notre Dame years, and a lot of his staff is from national background. So their class right now is somewhere in the top 8 in the country, and it's pretty national. It's not very Louisiana at this point, and I think that's a smart move. And he talked before, he's like, we're going to evaluate Louisiana, but if you're not the best player at that position, they're going to look elsewhere. And I don't know if I think that's upset a lot of Louisiana people, but I don't know if that's good or bad.
So this isn't the old days when it just you picked up the local paper and the top 10 players you offered scholarships to.
Yes, and maybe come 2024, 2025, when they're 2 years in, you actually have the full cycle with guys. Maybe they are at that point. You know, I just think right now, you know, the 2023 class, those relationships probably go back to, say, 2020, 2021. So you're playing a little catch up. But I do think you're right. It's going to be somewhere in between. They're going to look national while still trying to own their state.
And finally on Kelly, because LSU's, you know, everything's compared to Saban, but there are a lot of similarities, except Brian Kelly's a lot more successful than Nick Saban was when he showed up there.
No, it's a great point, and I think you see it in the reception. I think you see it in the way players act and all these things, but no, you're absolutely right. And that's, by the way, that's how Woodward hires. I think he thinks of hiring in percentages. You know, like, yes, they could have looked more at a Billy Napier, who, by the way, I think Billy Napier might do an incredible job at Florida, but there's less assurances. There's less, you know, percentage is lower. While Kelly, you know he is a proven coach. You know he can get you to successful place. So, yeah, I think that carries a lot of weight. That carries weight with the recruits, the players, all these things that, you know, this guy's proven it. So when he says something, you listen.
Is that, I mean, I realize Brian Kelly is a much bigger name than Billy Napier, but I'm sure a lot of people down there are going to be watching Napier closely.
Those two will be linked no matter whether anyone likes it for a long time, because a lot of people in that state really wanted Billy Napier as that hire, and a lot of other people are like, I think a lot of it was, do you really want to hire the Sun Belt coach? And I think that's a flawed line of thinking, but I think Scott Woodward's thinking is what I was saying. I think I know Brian Kelly's going to do well. I think Billy Napier might do great, but you just don't, you're not sure.
But we had that with Ogeron and Jimbo Fisher.
It's a great, but Tom Herman's the other.
Yeah, and
so
Tom Herman.
Yeah, that's three different ends of the spectrum. Yeah.
You never, LSU fans are arguably on any given day the best fans and the worst fans in the country.
It's fair. I think that's fair.
But that's to me, and I only lived in Louisiana 1 year covering that. And it was I think it was 100 years ago. But that's what I admired. When you're down there, they are Saints fans on a college unit. They don't care.
Yep.
And I think you have to be experienced to be able to handle that.
That's a good point. Yeah, and I think Brian Kelly's coming from a place that is, I'm not saying it's as chaotic, but it's the most expectation. It's tough. I mean, you are fighting 100 years of history.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think if anyone's mentally – I think it's a great point. If anyone's mentally equipped for all that, it's him. And also, Louisiana, as you know, is a very – you know, everything's politics. Everything's, you know, it goes from the governor down. And Brian Kelly has a background in politics that's been well documented. And also, he's just good at that kind of thing. So I think in a lot of ways that the fit stuff might be better than some think.
Yeah, and again, we'll talk about the next time, because I think it's you just nailed the most interesting part of that state. And I've been in those boxes upstairs, and you can get a bunch of guys in the state senate upset about something that nobody else understands.
Absolutely, that's well put. Or you'll see James Carville there every time.
Yeah, I think LSU ought to demand that Carvel quit wearing LSU garb when he does CNN interviews. I'm not sure that's the best representation.
Hey, no comment on that front. No comment.
I like Carvel, by the way. But,
absolutely.
I think the problem, Brody, is everybody is going to think that's LSU. It's James Carville is LSU.
Hey, James Carville is a Cajun man, and that's a lot like a lot of other Cajun people I know.
They speak
I love
mind.
James Carville.
Yeah. We appreciate it. It's really great to finally see you. We've talked a million times, and hope you'll come back soon. Thank you, Brody.
Thank you, Paul.
Brody Miller, one of the absolute best writers in the country, covers LSU for The Athletic, and we're coming right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.
And we are back on a very eventful first day of SEC Media Days. It started with the commissioner several hours ago. We are brought to you by Regions, and we've got a few minutes to go here before we shut it down. Let's get back to the call as we go. And Michael is in Los Angeles. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Paul. How are you today?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Paul, it's been about 10 years. We moved to Hawaii, and I could never get my times to line up to call you, but we're on the mainland. I just want to let you know what you said the day that SC and UCLA went to the big. You are the voice of the SEC on the SEC network, and you spoke the truth that no one in the Pac-12 would ever admit. You said that, you know, Texas and OU is great, but SC is on another level. There was Notre Dame and Alabama on that greatest of all time level. But the delusional presidents in the Pac-12, the same people who passed on bringing Texas and Oklahoma in because they didn't want to have the Longhorn network, they passed on Oklahoma again a couple years later. They forced equal revenue sharing, and now they're all crying because SC did what is best for them. This is a business. This is a billion-dollar business, and the idea that the socialists in Berkeley and Seattle wanted to redistribute the wealth, and everyone's going to get paid the same no matter how good or bad they are, and for Kliakoff to watch what happened a year earlier with Texas and Oklahoma leaving. And then be saying a month before SC left that, oh, no one's leaving, everything's fine. That the conference realignment, the entire history of college football has been driven by money. It was just, it was an amazing, amazing day. The incompetence of the pack finally laid, you know, fully bare. And everybody at my tailgate, all the season ticket holders I know, everybody is incredibly thrilled to go to the big, where we're not the only dog trying to pull the sled. You know, we self-impose sanctions on ourselves.
Well, Michael, let me add one thing, and here's why I said what I did. And yeah, Texas and Oklahoma bring a great deal, but Texas does not bring the entire state with them or any one city other than Austin, where I've been to LA enough times, you know it better than I do. Southern Cal, when things are going well, is a major player in L.A., and that's significant when you take that and add it to a network. It's the second largest city in America.
Absolutely, Paul. I'll go you one better. The other thing is I loved the conversation that you and Legend had that day talking about how you don't want it to be just the SEC because you've got to beat somebody in the championship game to have it meaningful. SC, I mean, I grew up in the South. I'm Southern, you know, till the day I die inside. SC is the perfect villain against the SEC, and we love playing the villain.
For sure.
I can't wait to get back to level where we're good enough to go head to head with Bama and the best programs in the SEC.
UCLA, hey, thanks for the call, Michael. UCLA's a little brother. Just going, I mean, nobody cares about UCLA. Nobody. And don't give me basketball, because this is not about basketball. Otherwise, Duke would have been the first team chosen. It's about football. And it's hard to remember who the UCLA coach is, even though I know him well. Coach is up next in New York. Hello, Coach.
Hi, Paul. I'm glad I got to talk to you. I've been on the phone an hour and a half. I almost forgot what I was going to say.
I apologize for that. Sorry about that.
I know, that's okay. But I forgot what I almost forgot what I was going to say because I saw you got in touch with your inner Italian self talking about the Italian restaurant. Now I got to take my wife there. So, but what I wanted to talk
listen,
to you about
I would
is,
say, are you in the city, Coach?
I'm close to New Haven. I'm in the upper upper New York.
Okay, so you're talking about Joe's family restaurant or the ones in New York?
Joe's.
I can't remember who it is. Yeah, I've been to that restaurant two or three times, and it would rival anything in Little Italy where I was 2 weeks ago. And it's hard to imagine rivaling anything in Little Italy or anywhere in New York, but I think it does.
Well, when you come back to New York, they're going to call you Mr. Fine Bombino, and we'll get you a seat at the table with the five heads.
Well,
family,
you know already. I went to Catholic high school, and everybody there was, or most everybody there was Italian. So I got a pretty good education as a youngster, and Italian food's always been my favorite. You can tell looking at me. Hey, thanks for the call, Coach. How about ending the show here in Atlanta with a call from L.A. and New York? We appreciate it. It's been a very busy show. We'll start coverage early tomorrow morning with Nick Saban's arrival and take it through all the way to 7 o'clock tomorrow when we will be signing off. We're signing off now. Have a great night. It's been a fun show. SEC Media Days, day one, now in the books.